once I see that the device works properly, it release me.
I very much doubt it. You see, before you reactivated it, I reversed the polarity of the neutron flow.
You realize what will happen?
Oh, yes. Do you? Well, I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow, so the TARDIS should be free of the force field now.
So he's reversed the polarity! Keep back!
Hello, everyone.
It's fine.
Welcome to Reversing Polarity, Doctor Who fan cast and musical extravaganza. My name is Rosie, and my pronouns are they/them.
My name is A, and my pronouns are also they/them.
Which cereal?
And we're recording for the first time in a fucking month.
It's so long. Oh my god, the energy.
Before we get into it, can we talk through the amount of delays that we had?
Yes. Okay. So because
we were gonna record this the day after we both saw The Green Knight.
Yes.
So I was expecting us to do an hour long Green Knight diatribe.
Yeah, I did watch The Green Knight again the other day. So.
How was it as a rewatch?
I really liked it, but then I did miss the experience of being in a cinema and being enveloped in the world.
It was my first cinema movie back after the pandemic. Yeah. It left me feeling dead inside in a really good way. But yeah, so you had food poisoning or something?
I wasn't feeling great. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I felt very... I think that was the evening where I was almost sick to the extent that I was like... I felt the mechanism begin and then it stopped. And I was like, I can't record a podcast tomorrow.
Oh.
And then...
Oh, that's the worst.
And then
I messaged you the next... Yeah, no, so we arranged for Tuesday.
Yeah.
So we were going to do it in a couple of days. And then I messaged you like, oh no, I'm one-upping you. I'm sorry. I'm in hospital. Don't think I'll be able to record tomorrow.
Just had to one-up me on that one.
Yeah, I needed emergency surgery to take my gallbladder out, which was a very exhausting week of tests.
Yeah.
And not knowing what was going on and not knowing if it was going to be surgery tomorrow or surgery in four months. And then they were like, no, you need it done tomorrow.
Yeah. And then you had a few weeks to recuperate, and we were gonna record on Sunday, and then on Sunday you messaged me like, I'm really sorry, but I have to go back to the hospital.
It could have been I've got just a minor infection, but I spent 3 hours waiting for antibiotics, and I got home and I was like, there's no way.
And now it's Tuesday,
but we're here now. Oh, it's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
It's been a long time. As you know, whenever we've gone a while without speaking to each other, magic
indeed
happens.
And what cereal was it that you watched 5 weeks ago, Aim, for this podcast?
That I did intend to rewatch and it hasn't happened. The Gunfighters.
Yes.
Perfect episode title.
Yes.
Sounds like a Transformers film to me.
It sounds, it doesn't sound like a Doctor Who serial. However, it is perfect. It's by Donald Cotton.
It's really
the first Doctor, Stephen and Dodo. So it's our first Stephen and Dodo serial.
They're both
My first.
I really like them as a
pairing. Yeah,
it's
very good. It's my first full serial with Dodo in, because I'd seen the Celestial Toymaker surviving episode, which is a weird one.
I think I've seen Dodo.
She is in about... how many serials is she in? She's in this, Celestial Toymaker, The Ark, The
Not
War Machines. The War Machines is her last one, and The Savages.
The War Machines I've
Savages.
Seen.
So she comes in... Is The Ark her first one? I don't know. She appears at the end of The Massacre of St. Bartholomew's Eve, but that doesn't count.
First appearance of The Massacre, so...
But yeah, so it's our first one with those two. It is possibly the most widely reviled serial in Doctor Who history besides The Twin Dilemma, and I don't know why, because it's perfect.
I really enjoyed it. I went in expecting to just not, because it's a historical and it's a mid-60s story and they can be slow. And I had so much fun.
I mean, our last historical and first historical, in fact, was The Reign of Terror, which I adore, but is also extremely worthy children's television from 1963 or 4.
It's
Whereas
not my
this
jam.
Is like, it's like,
it's like
a
western,
but a comedy western.
It's a very high drama musical western.
Thank you to Donald Cotton, my icon. I love him. He had previously done The Mythmakers, which is a completely missing serial set in Troy.
I've heard so many things about
that. Oh dear. What are the things you've heard about it, Aime?
It's mostly that it sounds like a story that would appeal to me, but would not work very well in a modern sensibility.
See. Well, that's life.
I'm probably missing out on some tea there from this.
I don't know. I'm just like, is it racist? Like, I don't know very much about it.
Probably.
They didn't mention that in Robin Toby's marathon watch of Doctor Who Volume 1, The 60s by Robert Shearman and Toby Haddock, which I did buy in the interim between episode recordings.
Oh, yeah. How's
that? I read all the way up to the end of The Gunfighters and then I stopped for the verisimilitude of it all. It's very good. I like it. In the interim yes. between episodes, also went to Cardiff and had a meltdown in a comic shop because it turned out they were a specialist Doctor Who bookshop.
Fuck. You told me the book yes. sent me pictures. I did not realise it was
yeah,
it was that.
I had a moment. Also, I went. Guess where I went back to today, Aime?
Did you go back to the books and comic shop to check how many copies of The Twin
Dilemma?
Yes, I did.
I went back to the television and movie store. I can send you a photo. What's left?
Please do.
There's still a lot of copies is what I'm going to say to the listener. There's still a lot of copies. Some people might say, Rosie, are you just reusing the same photo? No, genuinely, there's still that many copies of The Twin Dilemma. And I first went in just after Christmas.
Yeah, I'll be 14,
yeah, 14
at the
moment. I think there used to be 16. So clearly,
one of them went to me.
Yeah. Oh my God. God, what were we just talking about? Shit. What we were doing in the interim. But anyway, one Stephen and Dodo. Our previous knowledge we've sort of established is that I haven't seen any Dodo serials. I have seen, I recently watched The Time Meddler, which is a Stephen and Vicky one, and God, I love Stephen in it. He's the most cynical little man. Perfect.
Stephen is such a great...
I love Stephen.
Almost a foil for one.
Yeah.
Really good
Stephen.
Choice.
Stephen is wonderful. And I obviously listened to The Five Companions, which also features Stephen. But besides that, for this era, I am sadly deficient, mostly because a lot of it is missing.
We'll sort that out one day.
One
day. It's on the to-do list.
One day, yes. Our future trip to Singapore. Shall we get started on our synopsis?
Let's do it. When the first Doctor, Stephen and Dodo arrive in the town of Tombstone in 1881, the Doctor's only aim is to find a dentist. Adamant that they should only stay a night in Tombstone, the Doctor finds their stay prolonged when he inadvertently becomes involved with a group of gunmen out to kill Doc Holliday. Great premise!
It's such a good premise. And the fact that they're only there to find a dentist, they couldn't just stop and go somewhere else to find a dentist. They have to go to the Wild West.
They could
dentist.
Go to, like, future dentistry.
But no.
I imagine dentistry in 300 years' time is going to be way better than it is now.
You would think.
But this is still in the time where the Doctor can't pilot the TARDIS at all, isn't it?
Yeah, so he's just got to kind of rely on being somewhere where they have teeth. So, you know, I guess Earth is good enough for that. The premise is very fun. I love the sort of very, very opening of the episode, which I guess we'll discuss in a minute, which is just a bunch of people, you know, riding on real horses into Tombstone.
So
and there's
good.
Just a big sign that says Tombstone, which I know is probably what it was actually like, but it's very fun the way that they've built the set.
Yeah, I think the set is very similar to, it's effectively a one street town, I think.
Yeah,
for all extents
it's good.
Purposes.
I like sort of the whole aesthetic of it. Episode one is called A Holiday for the Doctor. This is the last serial where there were individual episode titles. After this, it was just The Savages or The War Machines. So we're sort of the end of an era. The end of an era, this one, I think. Mm. Three strangers, Ike, Phineas and Billy Clanton, arrive in Tombstone with one thing on their mind, revenge for their brother's murder at the hands of Doc Holliday. And we have this scene occur just after a beautiful sung narration by Linda Barron.
It's beautiful.
So good.
It's like a little Greek chorus overviewing the plot.
Yes. And it's fantastic, and there's like 16 verses. They specially commissioned it for the serial, and it's really good. I love it. I found the sheet music for it, and I will be learning it.
Perfect.
The Doctor and his companions materialise in a nearby lot. The Doctor emerges from the TARDIS with a toothache. Stephen and Dodo are overjoyed to discover they are in the Wild West, but the Doctor is unsure if this is the place to fix his teeth.
Good. I'm glad he has doubts.
Yeah, it's, you know, he may not know much about dentistry, but I think he is vaguely aware of the fact that your dentist shouldn't just be advertising to you with a big tooth hanging outside the door.
Very funny.
Yeah, which is what Doc Holliday has at his dental establishment. Meanwhile, the Clantons meet Seth Harper in the Last Chance Saloon. They talk about their vendetta against Doc Holliday and are overheard by the barman Charlie and the singer of the saloon, Kate Fisher. Kate Fisher!
She's great. Wife.
What I like about this serial, and by like, I mean... I think is very funny and unfortunate, is that Kate Fisher, I think, is fairly clearly supposed to be a sex worker, but they're not allowed to say that. So she's...
Or strongly imply it, either.
Yeah, they really do imply it at least a little bit, just with the, sort of the outfit and the visual language of it. Mm. But she's a singer and also, you know, very cool and sexy and confident, and I love her very much. Morally grey, ambiguous, you know, gets what she wants. Love mm-hmm. her. When Stephen and Dodo emerge, they are dressed as fancy dress cowboys.
It's so beautiful.
It's so good. Stephen tries his best impression of a cowboy, boasting about being the fastest gun in the West. This is over...
Yes, Stephen, please. That's a brilliant idea. Nothing bad
can
come of this.
Dead Eye Steve. This is overheard by the local marshal, Wyatt Earp, who takes his shtick as serious and takes him into custody to protect him against Doc Holliday, who will not take kindly to such boasting. I don't think he does take him seriously. He goes, oh god, this kid is so stupid. He's so stupid. Does he not know where he is? Stephen has some bad luck this serial, I think.
I don't think he has the worst luck.
No, he doesn't have the worst, but still pretty bad.
Pretty bad, yeah. I love the outfits.
Yeah.
I love the doctor being cranky about the outfits
as
well.
Until Dodo gives him a hat and he's like, oh, that's very kind of you, my child. Thank you.
I do like the hat.
Yes, he does like the hat. Dodo looks so cute in this outfit. I'm not the biggest fan of her normal 60s outfit. It's just very costumey to me, and I don't know why, with all the circles and such on it. I'm also not the biggest fan of Steven's go-to outfit, because his very first outfit in the chase is like a sexy, bedraggled pilot's uniform, and he has a beard. And then as soon as he comes onto the TARDIS, he shaves, and it's like, no, why can't we have a companion with a beard?
Not in 1960. One second, let me check my notes. Five?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we've had a companion with a beard... yet. I'm thinking about it.
I'm thinking very hard.
Don't think we've had a companion with a beard.
Have we really had a doctor with a beard?
No.
What does Doctor Who...
Unless you, like, count, you know, whatever person they're pretending to be romantically interested in as a ruse.
I count that. I'm glad we asked the important questions on this podcast.
Well, now I'm consumed wondering why we haven't had a companion with a beard besides Stephen in one episode of The Chase. And also the very beginning of The Time Meddler. And then he goes into the TARDIS wardrobe and he emerges looking clean-cut and handsome, but not as handsome because he is no longer bedraggled.
Scruffy.
Kate Fisher, who is Holliday's lover, goes to warn Doc, who is just...
Thank you for
Yeah, who
Doc.
Is just set up as a dentist. Doc refuses to leave, despite Kate's insistence. They are visited by the town's sheriff, Bat Masterson, who warns Doc against causing any trouble. As Masterson leaves Doc's surgery, he encounters Earp with the doctor and his companions. Good bit coming up. By this time, the doctor has worked up a story. He is Dr. Caligari, a travelling player, with his piano player Dodo DuPont and singer Stephen Regret. Now, he doesn't say the word piano player. He says, Miss Dodo DuPont, Wizard of the Ivory Keys.
It's beautifully put.
Yeah, she doesn't play the piano. Like, she ends up being able to play it magically well, but she... She can't play the piano.
The reason in the script she was meant to be the singer.
Yeah, but she couldn't...
But she cannot sing.
Yeah.
And it's a nice little...
So they switched it round.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Stephen Regret.
To my specific entertainment, I think, is why they
did it. Yeah, no, exactly. They did it just for you.
Just for me. I'm spoiled by this fandom.
Yeah. Everyone's like, wow, well, we don't really have anywhere for you to, like, perform. And they're like, no, it's all right. I just need to go to the dentist, says the doctor. And he's directed to Holliday. When the doctor sees the primitive conditions, he tries to back out, but Dodo convinces him. They agree to meet at the saloon. This is so funny because she walks off with Stephen and she goes, I hope he's not expecting an injection.
It's beautiful.
It's very funny. They agree to meet at the saloon. The doctor enters and interrupts Holliday and Kate mid-clinch.
Ooh, steamy.
Very steamy. He tries to use this as an excuse to leave, but is sat down by Holliday, pleased to have his first customer.
I don't know what entertains me so much about the doctor trying to get out of situations he doesn't want to be in.
That's most of this serial, and it's very entertaining.
It's perfect.
I just want to take a sidebar and say that I love Doc Holliday in this. I think he's great. He's like... such a bastard, and it's so impressive.
He is exactly what you want from that caricature.
Yeah, it's such a specific character, and he does it very, very well. And it's just, he's horrible, but in a way that's very likable, which I quite
very
like.
Very watchable, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. In the Last Chance Saloon, the cowboys are getting restless and begin to shoot bottles from behind the bar. This is interrupted by Stephen and Dodo, who come in to reserve some rooms. They sign themselves in as a singer and a piano player, something that interests Charlie on account of his last piano player being shot.
Also, comic, beautiful, what yeah. we want from a Wild West story.
As Stephen and Dodo go up to their rooms, the Clantons and Seth overhear them mentioning the Doctor, whom they take to be Holiday, and assume Stephen is working in cahoots with Holiday. Seth is charged to go and seek out Holiday, whilst Billy is told to convince Stephen and Dodo to come and join them in the saloon. So the whole thing is they go up and they go, three rooms! Three rooms for us, me and Miss Tupin.
Their accents
here.
Are beautiful as well.
Yeah, the thing is that Stephen puts on a fake American accent, which is supposed to be bad, right? Like, it's deliberately a bad accent. But then there's a lot of characters who are just supposed to be American, and they wanted to cast American and Canadian actors, but they ended up not being able to. They got, like, one. Yeah. I think, is it Doc Holliday's actor is American, or Wyatt Earp's actor is American?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my
head. One of the actors is American, and everyone else is just doing a cod American accent, and some of them are better than others, but Stephen's is the worst. And my favourite thing about it is that it drops from sentence to sentence. He just drops it to talk to Dodo, and everyone is in earshot, and they're like, what is he doing?
Who is this
practicing
guy?
An English accent. It's so stupid. Back at the dentist, the Doctor has had his tooth pulled, and whilst Holiday is in the back room, encounters Seth. Seth greets him with, Doc? To which the Doctor responds, I am, yes. Seth then asks, Holiday? The Doctor, imagining himself to be on a sort of holiday, misunderstands and responds with the affirmative. Thinking he has found his man.
I love mistaken identity stories, but that just takes it to such a beautiful extreme.
It's so contrived, and as a result, it is very funny. But yeah, thinking he has found his man, Seth orders the Doctor to be in the saloon in 5 minutes. This has all been overheard by Holiday, who seizes the opportunity to get out of his situation. He equips the Doctor with his own gun and sends the Doctor on his way. He and Kate are fully in cahoots on this one. It's great. Seth returns to the bar, and the Clantons force Stephen and Dodo to perform a song. Dodo plays the piano while Stephen sings the ballad of the Last Chance Saloon. The Clantons and Seth ready themselves to shoot Holiday as he comes through the door. Outside, the Doctor approaches the Last Chance Saloon.
Let's cycle back to the fact that they're literally making that song from the beginning completely diegetic, but yep. B, they're like, oh yeah, let's just sing about this place we're in, about the blood on the sawdust.
Yep.
So good.
We'll do it at gunpoint. The way that Stephen sings it is so funny. Peter Purvis is just so good.
Great comic acting.
He is wonderful. We love Stephen. Stephen's the best. Mm-hmm. He also has a very soothing voice when he's not doing fake American. Man, what a first episode. I watched it again with my parents the other day, and they hadn't seen the gunfights ever, and they deeply enjoyed it.
It's because it's a good story.
It's a great story. We haven't actually finished watching it because we had to stop. Because the internet wasn't working, but we'll finish it soon. It's just so funny. Like, it all hits. Dodo and Stephen are wonderful. There's a lot of pratfalls. Stephen's outfit is so ludicrous that it becomes funny. It's got stars and fringe all over it, and it's clearly a costume. Yep. It's perfect. It's perfect stuff.
All right, episode 2, Don't Shoot the Pianist. Pianist?
Perfect
pianist.
Title.
Pianist.
Pianist.
I'm always
pianist.
Worried that I'm going to say penis. Always. Back at the dentist's surgery, Doc Holliday gloats that he is setting the Doctor up for a fall. He wonders why Kate isn't answering him and discovers that she has left, headed towards the Last Chance Saloon.
She's had a crisis of conscience, and she's going to go rescue the Doctor.
Stephen and Dodo are still singing and playing the piano when Kate returns and orders Dodo off her piano. She distracts the cowboys by singing to them while Stephen plays.
Sorry, we've already sung this one to you 4 times. I'll make it 5. Can we at least sing another song?
No. This is the only song.
This is the only one that we commissioned. We're not going to license anything
Dodo
else.
Dodo leaves to her room in a mood because of the attention Kate is giving Stephen. The Doctor enters and, through a number of misunderstandings, is believed to be Holiday. The Doctor realises their mistake, seemingly remembering the name of the Clantons, and tries to explain. Holiday enters the saloon through a back door and stands on the staircase listening to the proceedings. The Doctor fails to convince them. While the Doctor brandishes his gun, Holiday fires in such a way to knock Harper's gun from his hand.
Classic sharpshooting thing.
Also, one of the reasons I think the Doctor is Doc Holliday is because he's got Doc Holliday's gun, which has Doc Holliday's name on it. And they're like, of course you're him.
Yeah, he said that in the previous thing. Damn. It's inscribed by my father here down in Alabama. Beautiful.
Kate takes control and orders the four men up against the piano for some reason, while the Doctor holds his gun still.
Well, the other side of the room doesn't exist, I assume. It's where the camera is.
There's a camera in the wild fucking west. Wow!
It's so
amazing.
Weird. I've been so absorbed in the story, I forgot it was a film.
A saloon and a photo place? Yes. Passport photo taker?
Photographers?
Oh, that's a good word.
It is, thank you.
Hearing the shot, Dodo comes down to investigate but meets Holiday, who escorts her back to her room. Wyatt Earp and Masterson enter and try to find out what has happened. They arrest the Doctor and lead him from the saloon, allowing the cowboys to continue thinking the Doctor is Holiday. With the Doctor gone, the cowboys turn on Stephen.
Yes, this is because Wyatt Earp is determined to save his horrible erstwhile boyfriend, Doc Holliday, from death. Yeah. Even though they've fallen out and they're thrice divorced.
I love me a thrice divorced energy.
Yeah, they have such thrice divorced energy. They really do.
Kate joins Dodo and Holliday in her room, where they plan on waiting until the trouble has died down, despite Dodo's distress at the arrest of the Doctor. The Doctor has been locked in a jail, with Earp suggesting that it's safer with his status as a wanted man.
I just want to flag up that the TARDIS wiki has spelt jail in the sort of traditional way, G-A-O-L, which I really love.
And is almost definitely not how it would have been spelt in the Wild West.
No, it's such beautiful. A fun touch. Thank you, TARDIS wiki, for such a beautiful bit of verisimilitude.
Masterson agrees with the ploy. Having the Doctor in prison means that the Clantons and Harper will think Holiday is locked up. Earp goes out to find the real Holiday. In the saloon, Stephen tries to convince the others of the Doctor's innocence, saying that if he had the Doctor here, he could prove it. The cowboys take this to mean he is proposing a prison break and agree to back him up. Love it. Love it, love it, love it. Upstairs, Doc is thirsty and Kate reminds him he left a bottle in his dentistry. He says that he'll sneak back.
God, she's so mad at him. She's just like, I'm not getting you a drink. Are you kidding?
I know there's a drink downstairs. Fuck that. On arriving at his dentistry, Earp is there and orders him to leave town before morning. Earp will tell the Clantons the truth tomorrow morning. He explains that Pa Clanton and his sons are rustlers and that he is biding his time before he and his boys run them out of town.
Whoa.
In the saloon, the Clantons and Harper tell Stephen to pass a gun through the jailhouse window to the Doctor, with which he can force his way out. They'll wait outside to welcome him back to society. Stephen agrees. Phineas follows him, just in case he makes a run for it with Holiday. Dodo asks Kate if she really intends to marry Holiday, an outlaw. Kate replies that she has met many outlaws and that Holiday is the best of the lot. A real gentleman.
Is he, Kate? Is he?
Well, I mean, maybe he is by some standards.
Yeah, like, comparatively, but, like, that's compared to Johnny Ringo, who's going to show up next episode and is an unrepentant murderer.
Fucking
like,
adore Johnny Ringo. He was so much fun.
Being the cream of a spoilt crop is not very good. Like, you're still going to get ergotism or whatever.
Holiday arrives and tells Kate that they have to leave. Earp is gunning for him, and he doesn't want to kill a friend.
Friend.
We know what it means.
Yeah, I hope you can hear my air quotes.
I can. They're very loud today. Stephen gives the Doctor the gun through a window, telling him that the Clantons still think he's Holiday. Once he is gone, the Doctor hands the gun to Earp, asking him to meet Stephen outside in his stead and tell him he wants to remain in jail as it's the safest place for him.
The Doctor wants
no part in your shenanigans. Thank you very much.
He's like, people keep handing me guns and I wish they would stop. This is also one of the many instances of my favourite running joke in the serial, which is the First Doctor calling Wyatt Mr. Worp, just non-stop, for no reason.
That's gotta be...
just calls him Mr. Worp.
It's got to be a Hartnellism. It's got to be one of his fluffs that he just can't stop.
I don't know, because then later on Stephen does it as like a sort of semi-joke, and I'm like, is it a deliberate thing that one just doesn't care? Or is it William Hartnell? Like, I don't know.
I hope it's a Hartnellism that Peter Purvis was just like, you know what? This is funny.
Let's do it.
Let's ruin more takes.
I'm going to do it in every take.
Well, Hartnell and Purvis didn't like the director, so I can imagine they would just start to block stuff.
Oh, classic.
In the saloon, the Clantons incite the locals to violence, telling them to break... Oh, have I done that one? Nope, I haven't. In the saloon, the Clantons incite the locals to violence, telling them to break Holiday out of jail and hang him from the nearest tree.
Yikes.
Phineas brings Stephen in, whom he found running away from the saloon, and they tie him up, saying that if the doctor refuses to leave jail, they'll hang Stephen instead.
Bit dramatic.
Yeah. Kate has got her stuff together, ready for departure, when they see the mob pass with Stephen from an upstairs window. Doc makes his way downstairs, and Kate calls after him. Hearing the name Doc, Harper, who has been left behind, inquires if he is Holiday. He says yes, and draws his gun faster than Harper, shooting his opponent.
The drama.
Doc tells Kate to ready three horses, planning to take Dodo with them when they leave. Dodo is unsure, but finally complies, and they leave the saloon. Erp and Masterson let the doctor out of jail to see the mob gather outside. The Clantons announce that they want Holiday within 2 minutes, or Stephen will be hanged.
Ooh.
It's good.
Oh my god, the drama of it all. Again, just a good episode. Just a good, solid episode. Lots happened.
Yeah, very pacey. Lots of fun within very high stakes.
Yeah, and I like that, I think this will continue through the serial, but that when people die, it is treated as like a serious moment.
Yeah.
Like a serious beat in an otherwise lighthearted story.
Yeah.
Like Harper dying, it feels very dramatic, and you're like, oh my god.
And I think that's partly... That makes the stakes of threatening to hang the Doctor or Stephen feel even bigger because they've gone there already.
Yeah, absolutely. There's murder. It's a serial full of murder and singing.
And we loved it.
And it's perfect. Episode 3, Johnny Ringo. The Doctor tries to leave, but Erp and Masterson hold him back. Erp says he has a plan and disappears. Billy Clanton fronts up to Masterson as the sheriff pulls a shotgun. just as they're attaching the noose, Erp attacks, knocking Phineas out. He frees Stephen. Realising they're caught in the crossfire of Erp and Masterson, the mob disperses. The bartender Charlie arrives and tells the Clantons that Harper is dead, shot by Holiday in the saloon. The Clantons confront Erp, who admits he knew the doctor wasn't Holiday.
How did he know?
Yeah. Charlie, Erp, Masterson and Stephen carry the unconscious Phineas into the jail. This is the most incredible scene when they're carrying Phineas because you can tell they want to make the most of the set. So they literally walk in a semicircle and turn back on themselves to take him into the saloon for no reason.
I didn't clock like, that. That's amazing.
I noticed it the first time and then I had to notice it the second time because I'd already noticed it and I can't think about anything else watching the scene. It's insane. The Doctor says goodbye to Erp and Masterson and says he and Stephen intend to leave in the morning. But oh no, where's Dodo? In the saloon, Paul Clanton tells his sons that he wants to hire Johnny Ringo to help them fight Erp. His sons protest, but he does not think they are capable. I think he said something like, I was going to pay Harper $100, but I'm going to pay Johnny Ringo $500 because my useless sons couldn't do it.
Very high drama.
Very high
Very
drama.
Comic drama. Comic drama. No, ignore me.
Dramedy?
That sounds like something. Yeah, there's something there.
Stephen and the Doctor return to the saloon, and Charlie tells them that Dodo left with Holiday. The Doctor claims that Holiday is his friend, recalling how he removed his teeth. Then they retire to their rooms, intent on seeking Holiday out in the morning. This is very deliberately delayed pacing. Like, you can't just have them go and catch up with Dodo straight away, so they have to go and have a snooze first.
Oh, they have had a bit of a day.
Yeah, they have had a little bit of a day. Doc, Kate, and Dodo find a place to sleep, but Kate wants to continue as they are still near Tombstone. Doc says he doesn't want to be too far away, as when the Clantons and the Erps meet, he wants to be nearby to help his friend. Mm. Dodo is pleased with this, as she states that she needs to return to the Doctor as soon as she can, too. As Doc leaves to get food, they hear gunfire and he returns. He ran into an old friend who has now lost his appetite. He's just getting more and more murder happy as the serial goes on. She's a character beat that... exists. Meanwhile, Ringo enters the saloon and talks to Charlie. The barman tells him that the Clantons want help dealing with Erp, but Ringo already has a target, Doc Holiday. Charlie tells him that they're also after Doc, but Ringo wants to kill him on his own. Charlie promises that he won't tell anyone. Ringo agrees and shoots him dead. Oh my god.
Oh, a murder hobo is in town.
Yes, and here we have two more verses of singing of The Last Chance Saloon, all about Charlie the barman.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Charlie the barman. taken his last breath. I can't remember how it goes, but it's great. I love this. I love this song. It is perfect. In the morning, Dodo asks Doc if he is going to return her to the doctor today. He says no. Angered, Dodo takes his gun and threatens him. Absolute top tier best Dodo moment. She is incredible. Doc agrees to take her home and asks Kate to stay. Realizing Doc had a gun and was about to shoot her, Dodo faints. I thought she fainted just because she didn't like holding it. She was like, oh, I'm glad that's over now. Thank you for helping me out with that. I'm just going to go and have a lie down.
I'm done. Now, again, stressful situation. Gotta have a stress nap.
Very, very stressful situation. It is so good, though. She's got both... She's pointing it at him. She's like, I don't want to have to shoot you. I'll make sure I do it somewhere that won't kill you. And he's like, well, currently you're pointing it at my head. And so she moves it and goes, oh, is that better? And he goes, yeah, a little bit.
It's so good.
It's so good. Stephen and the doctor come down into the bar in the morning and find the dead Charlie with Johnny Ringo sitting calmly at the table. The doctor asks Ringo to wait in the bar for Earp to investigate, but Ringo claims that only Holiday would shoot an unarmed barman. Stephen tells Ringo they also seek Holiday. Ringo suspects they want him dead too, and the doctor denies any intention to kill him. Ringo invites Stephen to ride with him after Doc, and he agrees. At the jail, Wyatt's youngest brother, Warren, has come to with bad news. His other two brothers are too busy to come and help Wyatt. Wyatt says that this is no good and says that Warren is too young to fight. The doctor
visits the jail.
The doctor visits the jail and tells Earp that Stephen has gone off to holiday with Ringo. He points out that photos of Ringo are all over the jail on wanted posters. Wyatt is concerned that Ringo may side with the Clantons and goes out to search for him with Masterson. He leaves Warren in charge, despite the fact that Warren is like 12. I don't know how old he is. 12. But anyone who's too young for something I will refer to as being like 12.
I feel like that's very much part of the vernacular.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Ringo and Stephen, it's just, I know that it's the name of the cowboy first.
You're imagining
it just
the
makes
Beetle.
Me think of, yeah, I'm imagining the Beetle, Ringo Starr. Hey, it's me, Ringo Starr, and I'm gonna kill some cowboys. I lost confidence in that immediately. I don't know if you could tell.
It still hurts me to laugh.
So, hey, Ringo. No! Ringo and Stephen split up and search for Holiday at the saloon where he stayed. Ringo finds Kate, a former girlfriend of his. She lies, telling him Holiday was headed for New Mexico with Dodo, with whom he has run off. Ringo tells Kate that he's taking her back to Tombstone as revenge for him spurning her. Hang on. As revenge for her spurning him? Surely.
Yes, it must be.
Come on, TARDIS Wiki. She refuses, but he threatens her at gunpoint. I really didn't like Johnny Ringo already, and this made it much worse, because I was like, no, don't threaten Kate at gunpoint. She is my wife.
No, he's the worst, but I enjoy him. There's something about his performance that's just so engaging. And
yeah, he's very evil, and he's very good at it.
He's very evil, he's not one-dimensionally evil.
Yeah. In the jail, Phineas taunts the young Warren Earp. Ike and Billy Clanton enter and threaten him into opening the cell. Warren tries to grab his gun. Billy shoots him. They free Phineas and leave. Oh my god.
Drama. Again, another jailbreak. Right.
I'm just doing some on-the-fly editing of the last episode.
Thank you. I'll start reading it. Alright. Episode 4 is called The OK Corral. In the saloon, Masterson, Earp, and the doctor cover Charlie's body. Masterson works out that Ringo killed him, but Earp reckons the doctor may have had a hand in it. Rather than being accusatory for this act, he recollects how useful and powerful was statement unclear when the doctor disarmed the Clantons the first time he met him. Earp deputises the doctor, giving him a badge and a gun. Sheriff Doctor, I love to see it.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Again, the doctor shows distaste at being given a firearm. Virgil Earp enters unexpectedly and offers his support in the fight against the Clantons. Masterson and the Earps leave. The doctor remains in the saloon. The Clantons return to Parr and find Ringo there with Kate and Stephen. They boastfully tell Parr about killing Warren, who tells them that it really is war now. However, Warren is alive, but barely. His brothers tend to him in the jail. He tells them it was a Clanton who shot him, then he dies. Wyatt is furious and tells Virgil to inform the Clantons that they'll meet at dawn at the OK Corral. Masterson tries to convince him this isn't the way of lawmen. Earp renounces the law.
This is insane. Like, the whole serial, he's been like, you know, we have to follow the law except for my boyfriend. Now he's like, well, actually, fuck all of the law, because if I follow the law, my boyfriend's gonna die, and I can't have that. Ugh, it's real love. It's true love.
Which we see a lot in this show.
Yes.
Stephen plans to escape to warn the inhabitants of Tombstone about the Clantons, but Kate warns him about the futility of this. The Clantons hear Virgil approach, and Ringo recognises him as the Marshal of Dodge City.
Oh my
another
God.
Great name for a place.
It is perfect.
Virgil gives them his message and asks Stephen whose side he's on. Stephen tells him he supports the Earps, but cannot leave as Parr threatens him. Ringo, who hid upstairs during the talk, returns and lays out a plan to use the Clantons as bait and ambush the Earps from behind while the Clantons go in from the front.
I'll admit, this is when I kind of switched off mentally and was just looking and going, oh yeah, there's a fight going on. Okay.
Yep. The fight is impressive. Like,
it is impressive.
Put together really well.
Yeah, and it's choreographed and stuff, but also... It's not really what I'm here for in Doctor Who, fights.
Very valid.
Unless it's, you know, poorly choreographed sword fights with Ian Chesterton holding a sword.
Back at the jail, the Doctor tries to reason with Earp, but his protestations fall on deaf ears. Virgil returns and tells Earp that Kate and Ringo's horses were there. Gonna go with horses, that's fine.
Yeah.
He also informs the Doctor that Stephen is there. The Earps figure Ringo is siding with the Clantons, and the Doctor tells them they cannot take on both the Clantons and Ringo. As he does so, Doc enters and announces that they won't have to. When asked by Wyatt why he's returned, he says the girl forced him to at gunpoint. A celebratory dodo walks into the jail and embraces the Doctor, and it's
perfect.
Adorable.
Perfect. Perfect.
Virgil refuses to fight alongside Holiday due to the fact that he's an outlaw, but when Doc is told that Kate is with them, he insists. With Doc back, The Doctor hands over his gun and badge, happy to be rid of them. Doc suggests that if Ringo's involved, there will be a tactic. He plans to hang back to observe anything Ringo might be trying to pull. Later that night, Dodo and the Doctor are in the saloon when Masterson enters and asks the Doctor to talk the Clantons out of the fight. But despite the Doctor's best effort, he arrives at the Clanton Ranch after the departure of Ringo and the Clantons.
No!
Timing in a show about time machines. Stephen tells the Doctor of Ringo's plan to circle around, and the Doctor tells Parr that they predicted Ringo would side with the Clantons and that Holiday has joined the Earps. The Clantons and Ringo arrive at the OK Corral, while the Earps have to face them. The Earps and the Clantons meet and the latter open fire, hoping they can stop the Earps. Once in range, the Earps also fire. Away from the main fight, Ringo comes across Holiday, approaching the fight and is about to shoot Doc when Dodo runs over and alerts him. Ringo takes Dodo hostage while Doc takes cover. Doc throws down his weapon. As Ringo goes to retrieve it, Dodo pushes him down. Doc pulls another gun and shoots him.
Oh my god!
Holiday tells the dying Ringo he thought he would do better. Billy makes a move to kill Doc, but he misses and Doc kills him instead. Virgil hits Phineas, who dies shortly after. Ike tries to run. Doc corners him and Ike fires his gun, only to find that it's empty. Doc and the Earps kill Ike.
Oh my god.
It's a very
god.
Busy fight scene.
Very busy fight scene. Lots going on. Lots of people firing guns up and down stairs. It's very active, and I'm glad that we have it as, you know, audio-visual footage rather than just audio, because otherwise it'd just be like, bang, 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 bang. I thought you would do better, bang, 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 and then you would cut.
Yeah, and then the song would play again, probably.
Yes, yes. Blood upon the sawdust, etc.
Sometime later, the Doctor and Doc are walking together with Dodo, Stephen, and Kate. He questions Holiday's reason for leaving. Kate and Doc unveil a wanted poster Masterson has released with Holiday's face upon it. Holiday claims that Wyatt is no longer a lawman, having been involved in the fight. He gives the poster to the Doctor and then leaves with Kate. The Doctor insists they leave in the TARDIS, much to the disappointment of Dodo. The TARDIS is now in a different setting and its crew are dressed differently. No, they're not. And its crew are dressed differently, discussing where they've arrived. Inside, the Doctor tells his companions that he knows exactly what their new destination is, the far future and an age of prosperity. As they leave the TARDIS, the scanner shows a savage figure appearing on the crest of a hill.
And that is the only surviving footage of the savages.
And it's definitely something.
To remain in this universe, the creature would have to reverse its polarity.
God, what a fun time.
It was a delight.
It's just the most fun that... I've had in a long time, and I just love it. Obviously I know why Doctor Who doesn't really do genre and tone shifts like this, because it was fucking despised for decades and still is. But here's the thing, we're going back to watch this from a perspective of it having been 60 years ago. This is great, just dipping in and out and going, oh, this one's a comedy western. This one's a sort of crime thriller investigation story where they're all an inch high. That's Planet of Giants.
I wonder if that's how some of New Who will be seen in 60 years' time as well.
I guess.
It's not quite as extreme in dramatic changes of tone.
I mean, even now, going back to like the Slitheen episodes, it feels like a massive weird tonal shift.
The Slitheen episodes are great.
They are great, but they also feel like a very strange tonal shift because it's clearly trying to appeal to children while also being a very grown-up story. Yeah. And I think Doctor Who did that better because it was always attempting to... It was never attempting to deliver both adult and child entertainment. It was just like, let's be entertaining.
Yeah.
Which I think works
better. It's family entertainment in a way.
Yeah, exactly. And Doctor Who does that.
Family entertainment with a lot of murder.
At its best, Doctor Who does that even now, like New Who does. But yes. It's trying too hard to appeal to both and we don't need it. Let's talk about our elderly man.
An apple a day keeps the, No, never mind.
Oh, I've really
Our sprightly little chap.
Sprightly? I enjoyed him in this episode. I just liked his attitude and his standoffishness. And, again, the mistaken identity stuff was so much fun.
He's just so irritated that you can tell William Hartnell is having a fucking blast doing the episode. So it never feels like... It's not like Tom Baker at the end of his run where he was just worn out and didn't want to be doing it anymore. William Hartnell wanted to do Doctor Who forever.
Yeah. I think it's at the time when the show had enough of a reputation that he was being recognised. And yeah. He liked being the Doctor, yeah.
Yeah, he loved being the Doctor. This, you know, and it's really sad that obviously he had to stop because of health
really.
Issues. Like, he agreed to be in the Three Doctors and then his wife was like, he can't... Hello? Oh, thanks, Father. Say hi to my dad, Aim.
Hi!
Aim says hello.
Very kind, I say hello back.
Yes, he says hello back. He doesn't know microphone etiquette.
That's fair.
Okay, but yeah, like he agreed to do the Three Doctors, but he wasn't like lucid enough to remember that he had agreed to do it. It's like, oh god,
poor boy.
But there we are. He had many flaws as a person, but I'm glad that he was the Doctor because he was good at it. Coming up with their cover identities as a theatre troupe between plays was very fun and ridiculous. And when he says thespians, that really got to me.
I did enjoy him in that scene. Something about his interaction with the barman was just a delight.
Yes, it's very, very good. I like that he wears a monocle. Very classic.
I like it when he has the hat.
Yeah, oh my god, the hat is so fun. He just looks great in this. Like, his
outfit
just fits
in. He should always have a silly hat to match.
He really should. His outfit really fits in with the times, which it doesn't usually. So, you know, a nice change of pace.
Well, it makes the identity confusion more believable.
Yeah, just a little bit. And then all caps, Mr. Werp. And then just a note, because we watched this a month ago. I was at work and I was watching it in the morning, marking some books. I was watching the serial at work and I was typing notes on Google Drive, but then the internet went down at work. So I just had a post-it note on my desk all day that just said, Mr. Werp! With 5 exclamation marks.
Please change your Twitter name to Mr. Werp with 5 exclamation marks.
Well, I can't right now because I've just changed it from the thing 1982 is the only movie to For
Which
Fuke's
it
Sake.
Which is
the only movie. it's got to be spooky for Halloween.
Fair. Are you saying that Mr. Werp isn't spooky?
It is the least spooky thing in the world. I'm very sorry to tell you.
It does sound like a little puppy dog. Like a little Bichon Frise.
Yeah, I really, really like William Hartnell in this. He's just having such a good time. And he's very good at the comedic stuff. And he's just loving life. And that's what's important to me.
Yeah, yeah. I have no other... There was like some Hartnell lightness in the middle as he was in jail. Mm. Probably because he wanted a nap.
Yeah, probably.
Yes, I haven't got anything else on my notes about him, which is...
No. Honestly, I don't have many notes on the serial. I just loved it.
Yeah, it was just a fun time.
I have to go.
Now look, if you're going to be in trouble, you'll need me to look after you.
Me too.
But you don't understand.
Yeah, Stephen.
Stephen.
Stephen
Good boy.
Taylor.
Nice friend.
Stephen Taylor.
Would like to go on adventures with him. Seems like a guy with a head on his shoulders. That head is sometimes sensible.
Yeah, as I've said in the notes, because it's a comic episode, everything he does is either peak comedy or peak tragedy. It's peak something. Like, he trips
Maybe
over
that's
immediately
why I...
after trying to be cool. He nearly gets hanged, whichever way around it is. He has to sing a song 5 times in a row. Peter Purvis didn't want to sing, but he sounds perfectly nice.
He sounds lovely, yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I love that he chose that as his cowboy outfit. I'm in love with a bi icon. He is a bisexual icon to me.
He is a bi icon. And he knows it, and he owns it.
Yeah, exactly. And as I've mentioned before, putting on this barely passable American accent and then immediately dropping it to talk to people he knows in earshot of other cowboys, and no one ever comments on it.
Maybe that's what all the cowboys were doing, though. Like, when they needed to be cowboy, they had the cowboy voice and then they just dropped it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean,
I like that headcanon of how the Wild West worked.
Yeah, it's...
I'm going to be a mighty powerful cowboy for now. And you're gonna fear me. And then I'll pop down to the pub for a cuppa.
The pub for a cuppa? I don't know about that.
Who's I had surgery 2 weeks ago. Don't ask me.
Who's having tea at the pub, babe?
Me if I don't want to drink.
That's fair. I've never
That's
had
a lie.
Tea
I usually get a Coke.
Yeah. Diet Coke's the best.
Definitely had tea at a pub.
That's very strange to me, but I didn't really drink tea, so maybe I'm not the person to do this. Dodo, I think we maybe can mostly transplant to wife, because we have two wives in serial. But do we have anything else to say about Steven Taylor, perfect spaceman?
I just would love more stories with him.
Yeah, I think I've mentioned before his origin, which we'll get to in depth when we do the chase eventually, and I'm looking forward
to it.
That'd be wild.
He was
in like he's a space pilot. He was in a space plane crash.
Space plane.
It is a podcast in joke to in dilemma episode. He was in a space plane crash and he got captured by I can't remember if it was the Mechanoids or someone else. It was some particular
Isn't that Johnny Sims
creature.
Band?
No, that's the Mechanism.
I know, that was the joke.
No, he was captured by Johnny DeVille and the Mechanism. Yes. He was put in solitary confinement for like 2 years, and his only companion was a little toy panda called Hi-Fi. And that's just the most insane companion backstory ever, I think.
And he's very untraumatized.
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily agree with that, at least within the confines of the episode. Like the chase. Obviously, the first Doctor era Doctor Who doesn't really address all of the horribly traumatic things that happen
that's
to the
true.
Characters.
Have
but
to
that's
wait
what
till
the expanded
for that.
Universe is for. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh god, you've got a traumatic short trip for me, haven't you?
Actually, it's not that traumatic this time. But yeah, that's Steven Taylor. I just love him. He's such a handsome boy.
He is a delight.
Do you think we could get Peter Purvis on the podcast?
Peter Purvis agent. Apparently his television and radio career continues at a brisk pace.
He very occasionally tweets.
Yeah, but he's 82. Yeah, he can come on the podcast.
Yeah, listen,
Peter, if you're listening.
Peter, if you're listening to our lovely little podcast.
We love Stephen Taylor. We'd love to talk about what it was like making Doctor Who. And I would also really enjoy to hear more about what it was like when you covered Cruft's dog show.
I think he's a bit bitter about that because they replaced him at short notice.
Oh, okay, maybe we shouldn't talk about the dogs.
On your knees, Doctor.
Gaytown. Which is also known as Tombstone.
Is it because all cowboys are inherently gay?
Yeah, just a little bit. So first off, obviously we have Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday. Thrice
Very...
divorced.
Yep. They care in a way that goes beyond the reasonable expectations
yes.
of the times.
It is the inherent loyalty one feels to their first boyfriend, even though he was awful. This is up to Holliday. Holliday thinks he was a great boyfriend.
So how far have you got in your Wyatt Earp Doc Holliday fic?
Unbelievably, I wrote all of this in about 20 seconds going, this is just what I think occurred. And I just still stand by it. I really stand
You're
by
right.
it. Holliday thinks he is a much better partner than he actually is. Because it's clearly
You're
true
right.
with Kate as well.
Boy, Kate
but yeah,
deserves
also,
better.
Also, Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday both have moustaches, which is gay culture. I know it wasn't gay culture at the time, but these days it's gay culture, I think. It's one of the many reasons Ted Lasso is a bi icon.
I'd never considered it that way.
I've
not considered the inherent queerness of the moustache.
I just always think of Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
Have you read the 85,000 word Ted Lasso Trent Crim fanfic?
Send me a link.
We also have just the concept of cowboys.
Which is inherently queer.
Yeah, there was a lot of queer activity among cowboys, as far as I understand. I haven't read deeply on this, but, you know, you're out in the lawless west, so to speak. There was definitely gay shit going on. And I've seen, you know, documentation of, like, photos from the time of gay and, you know, LGBT people hanging out, having a good time in the old west. So, you know.
I've just Googled it quickly and I found about a naked gay rodeo that is currently a regular event.
Oh, I love that. And then there's just the line where someone says, I'll take him from behind. Like,
wink, 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 wink.
Wink, wink, wink. And then I've got a quick moment for Kate and Dodo, just because they have some hair brushing scenes, which is inherently very intimate. And also kind of queer. I just love that they get to, like, speak to one another. I don't think it passes the Bechdel test, but as we've mentioned before, the Bechdel test is not intended as the be-all end-all of feminism.
But it's better than others.
It's just to point out whether you can reasonably construe two women as being lesbians. And I think that's really iconic.
I mean,
oh
I can
my god, I love this image
lesbians.
That you just sent. This is
yeah,
good.
It's a bunch of vintage gay cowboys dancing.
Hell yeah.
In, like, traditional ballroom pose. It's great.
Oh, sure. Lots of people.
And there's a woman!
A woman. A woman? Hey!
So, Dodo. Perfect woman. I love her.
I love her style in this. I love her enthusiasm. She's very powerful when she holds a gun.
She is so happy to be here. Just so happy to be here.
Doesn't want to leave the West.
She really doesn't. She doesn't want to leave.
Where is Dodo from?
She is a contemporary London.
Yeah, that tracks.
Because she goes into the TARDIS thinking that it is actually a police box.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's good. The Doctor says, you're fastly becoming prey to every cliché-ridden convention in the American West. And what about it, Doctor? Why can't she have a little cowboy stuff as a treat, you know?
She deserves whatever she wants, in fairness. Mm.
She is a sweet girl, and I love her. Anyway, I was going to say, another of my favourite things that Dodo does is Stephen, I think, turns to her and goes, can you even play the piano? And she goes, I'll have a bash.
So enthusiastic. I adore
her. And then she
her.
Does it. She does it beautifully. She just knows how to play the piano. Either she was being falsely modest or, you know, she just magically learned to play the piano like fucking Tarzan's learning to speak English. I don't know, but I love it.
I really enjoy the implications of the latter.
Yeah, you know I love Tarzan.
I've not... Like, the Disney Tarzan, or just any
Disney
iteration
Tarzan.
Of Tarzan.
I tried reading the original novel, and it
don't,
is
don't
so
do that.
Racist.
Don't
it
do
is
that.
So racist.
Bad
also,
time.
I love that people at the time were like, this isn't how gorillas work. What are you talking about? And we have a second wife, unrelated to Tarzan, Kate Fisher. She's very sexy.
I think it's a very seductive, not quite evil, but morally grey. Very human in that way.
Yeah, she's very complicated in that she doesn't... Like, she's fine with the ruse that the Doctor is Doc Holliday, but she's not fine with him getting killed for it. She's like, I want you to escape, but I'm not going to let an innocent man get killed. Let's go and rescue him. And when Doc's like, I'm not going to do that, she's like, well, screw you, I'm going to go do it by myself.
Powerful. Epitome. Epitome girl boss. Would gaslight. Probably has gate kept.
Yeah, probably.
Very pretty.
Yes, she's so pretty. And she sings, and I assume dances, and all kinds of things. And I just am a big
Very
fan.
Protective. I love a woman who's protective of her piano.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. She's just wonderful. Gorgeous, morally dubious. Her dress is very low cut, which is very scandalous for Doctor Who in the 1960s.
It's also a great dress.
It is costume a great dress.
Whoever was in the costume department must have had a field day.
Yeah, they must have had such a fun time doing it. Oh,
you can tell with the sets. They had a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if they'd made any other Western things in the BBC around the same time.
They must have. They absolutely must have.
Must have. Maybe they filmed El Nombre on the same set.
It's probably for
El
the...
El Nombre! You know El Nombre? West...
No, I don't. I'm just saying yes and moving on to my very funny joke.
Okay.
They probably used it for the Western episode of Zed Cars. Thank you.
Do you know Ridley Scott worked on Zed Cars when he was starting off in the industry?
Once or twice.
I don't think I've mentioned Ridley Scott working on Zed Cars. That's why there's that famous
Zed
Cars.
You must have texted me that. That's not new.
There's that famous Zed Cars episode where one of the characters gets
famous.
Impregnated by a facehugger, and there's an alien creature burst out of his tummy. And no one mentions this when they talk about cultural influences on aliens.
It's because it was lost. It's because they've never been able to retrieve the reruns in Singapore.
I can't remember what I was going to say now.
We love Kate. We love Dodo.
Yeah.
We would have loved even more women in the story, but you know.
Yeah, I was going to talk about El Nombre. It was a segment of Number Time on BBC.
Oh
about
my God.
El Nombre! And I recently rewatched it, and I realised that they used almost exactly the same footage in every single episode, except for the bit where he forms a number in the sand. It's a different number every time.
Oh, wow.
It's great. I just just want people to remember El Nombre.
That has eluded me somehow.
Today's science fiction so often becomes tomorrow's science fact.
All right, we've already mentioned that this was the last serial that had an individual episode title. The next one would be Rose because of the change in format. And there are a couple of working titles for the story. One was The Gunslingers, and another was just The Wild West.
Which
I
too
quite
generic.
Like as a title. Very generic.
I would want, like, Gunfighters of the Wild West. Like a long one. Also, does the TV movie count as an individually titled episode?
Does it count as an episode?
I mean, it was broadcast on television, and it was technically a pilot for a series. Much to think about.
But what was it titled? The TV movie?
The Spirit Within. Meant to be fucking called? Isn't it The Spirit Within or something? I can't remember.
No,
it's
The Evil Within.
Stupid.
That was it.
Oh,
the
yeah. Evil Spirit Within is like a Final Fantasy movie, isn't it? But yeah.
No, isn't that the one about the horse?
I don't know. I haven't seen Spirit Valley of the Wind. I don't know what it's called.
Anyway.
And I will not learn.
A common myth is that this story had the lowest ratings of any Doctor Who story, which probably stems from the misunderstanding of audience share and audience appreciation scores. Audience share is the size of the viewing audience, and appreciation scores is based on a survey gauging the viewers' opinions of the programme. So the audience size for the serial is from 6.5 million for the first episode to 5.7 million for the last, which I think is fairly standard.
Yeah.
But the audience appreciation scores for the last three episodes equal or went below the lowest scores for Doctor Who, with the very last episode, the OK Corral, having a score of 30%, the lowest ever to date. Bullshit.
60s viewers had no taste. I think they did. They were hemorrhaging viewers at this point, which is partly why they needed to change up the format a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is also why they binned off Jackie Lane and Peter Purvis to replace them with Ben and Polly, who I do love.
As much
also...
as I love Ben and Polly, I also love Stephen and Dodo.
Yeah, exactly.
also need to share that the info text on this starts with, "Howdy, partners," with a D. "Come on in, set a spell, take your shoes off, this here's a story of the West, the old Wild West, or more precisely, as much as the writer recalled from the 1957 movie, The Gunfight at the OK Corral." It's so fun.
God, I love
just, I had to pause it and just copy that all down because I was having such a good time with it.
Yeah, I went to CEX today in the hopes they would have a copy of The Gunfighters, but sadly they did not. They had a lot of Doctor Who DVDs, but nothing that immediately grabbed me.
Classic Who or New Who?
Classic Who. Lots of Classic Who, but not much First Doctor, which is what I was sort of scanning for.
Right. Highly recommend getting your hands on the DVDs just for the info text, because it's a lot of fun.
Hell yeah.
The role of Johnny Ringo was offered to veteran actor Patrick Troughton, who you might have heard of.
Yeah, I think I've
heard of him. Soon to be cast as the Second Doctor, but he was too busy.
God, that would be so good.
Wouldn't that be? He would be a fantastic Johnny Ringo.
Like, the actor they got is very good too, but, you know.
I mean, we'll get to see Evil Troughton when we get to probably quite divisive episode, Enemy of the World, so.
Every time you refer to it in some way that is mixed feelings, and I'm excited to finally watch it.
I had so much fun watching it.
And?
Does involve... and it's racist.
Yeah. That's Doctor Who, isn't it?
That's 60s Who, and probably the rest of it, but I think it's most notable to us in the 60s. Anthony Jacobs, who played Doc Holliday, was the father of Matthew Jacobs and brought his son onto the set. The younger Jacobs later wrote the 1996 telemovie The Evil Within.
Whoa!
Wild, right?
Who would have guessed?
I actually really like that little connection.
Yeah, it's sweet.
And keeping the line of the actors, the Thunderbirds voice actors, David Graham, who played Brains, and Shane Rimmer, who played Scott Tracy, appear as Charlie the Barman and Seth Harper, respectively.
But of course, we can't recognise it because their accents are so flawless.
It's great.
One of the things that's really thrown me off about rewatching Thunderbirds is that I hadn't realised that all the Tracys are American.
Yeah.
Like, I sort of hadn't remembered that, and I don't know
is
why.
Is it because, like, Lady Penelope and Parker had stuck in your mind so prominently?
Yeah, but also, like, when I was a child, I thought everything was English. Like, everything. I just assumed everything was English.
Colonialism.
And it is an English show. No, it was more like, you know, I didn't know what languages were until I was, like, six. And I was watching a lot of Thunderbirds as a very small child, but, yeah, also because it was made in England, I think I assumed when I didn't remember like the details of it, I was like, oh man, that movie, they made them all Americans. And I'm like, oh no, hang on, they are American.
I need to rewatch a Thunderbirds movie.
I remember
bad.
I saw it in cinema.
Me too.
Man. And then I've put in for you a little clipping from Radio Times.
Yes.
The bold facts of what happened in Tombstone on that bright afternoon of October 24th, 1881 are simple enough. A group of notorious outlaws waited ranged along a wall near the OK Corral on Allen Street, their hands pointed near their holsters. Poised near their holsters, pardon me. Against them came the lawmen, including Wyatt Earp and the tiny gunfighter gambler dentist they called Doc Holliday. I love that he's
That's
tiny.
A CV.
It was the outlaws who fired first, and when the gun smoke cleared after a short, sharp fight, several bodies lay in the dusty street. But just why the famous Battle of the OK Corral happened is still not absolutely clear. One fact that certainly isn't recorded in any of the histories of the Old West is that Doctor Who, William Hartnell, was there, and the story of how this came about is told in the new adventure which starts today. The TARDIS, all lowercase except the T, very weird to see, with the Doctor, Stephen and Dodo aboard, touches down in Tombstone. The Doctor has a troublesome tooth, so he goes to have it seen to by the local dentist, who is of course none other than Doc Holliday. Soon all of the TARDIS travellers find themselves alarmingly caught up in the rumbling feud between the Doc and the Clanton faction. Oh man, wonderful, wonderful.
Really fun.
But yeah. I went looking for a clipping of like a review from the time to try and find some contemporary hatred for it. I couldn't find anything.
Yeah, I haven't had a massive look, I'm gonna be honest.
That's fair. But you know I'm the clippings person, so.
You are the clippings person. I always enjoy what you find down the magazine rabbit holes.
Hell yeah.
Now we'll all go, except Miss Shaw.
Oh, just a minute, I'm not gonna miss all
the... No, Miss Shaw.
Have you never heard of female emancipation?
Liz, this time I think he's right.
Why do people hate this cereal when it is perfect? It is the perfect cereal. It's so good.
I think it's a great way to do a pure historical, because while they have that rule is you can't interfere, you can't change things, having that identity confusion is a great way to involve them in the story.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
I think I can see, in a sense, like going, this is different and I don't like it. But come on, Donald Cotton deserves better.
He does. He does. It was just a pacey one to watch, and I think it has aged relatively well.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, definitely one that we would recommend checking out, I think. I have managed to get some info for our little historical context drop.
Woo!
Of what was the Wild West, about this particular story. And then I have another little fun context drop, which will interest approximately me.
Okay. Should we sort of broadly define the Wild West and then do this?
Let's do that first.
You can't rewrite history. Not one line.
So it's the American frontier, also known as the Old West or the Wild West. So I think it sort of became a thing after Manifest Destiny, where people would just, it was this whole thing where you would ride for days and days, and wherever you stopped, you got to set up a homestead. But obviously, this is obviously massively colonialist practice and bad, and they shouldn't have done it. That's sort of the obvious
thing. I mean, you can say that pretty much about everything to do with the founding of the United States.
Yeah, but basically they would, and then the Wild West was like the point where they had stopped doing that, like for the time being, and it was like the part beyond it was, in quotation marks, wild, quotation marks.
Read into that what you will.
Read into that what you will. Racism, probably. Yeah. But yeah, it was like everyone moved out and settled, and it was really difficult to patrol and manage and legislate, I guess, because people were constantly moving around. Part of it was the gold rush. People were moving into towns that suddenly boomed and then shrank based on how much gold there was.
And the gold rush itself was brutal. Lots of people killing each other to get to where lots of gold was.
Yeah. So basically the American frontier was just like this whole period of time before America was sort of codified as having approximately the size and shape it has now, as being like the whole of mainland USA. So it was just the period of time where America was still growing actively.
Or taking.
Growing. We're still stealing land.
It's expansion.
Yeah. We'll link some stuff about how that all works and why land back is really important.
Mm-hmm.
We are white English people who don't know a great deal about it. We just know what we've already said is that it was bad and it shouldn't have happened. Like, I've read Little House on the Prairie, the first one, and it's like, why are you doing this? Moving, like, it sounds miserable. Like, beyond all this other stuff that was bad about it, it just sounds miserable. Like, Oregon Trail, everyone dies of dysentery.
Oh,
why are you doing this? The fucking, is it the Donner Pass or whatever? The Donner Party.
The Donner Pass.
Where they all
Donner
end up
Party.
Eating each other.
Eating each other, like, to survive. There's a great Puppet History episode about
that. Yeah, there's a great, I think Ask a Mortician did it as well.
Yes, love Ask a Mortician.
Did you watch her latest one about the fucking Starvation Heights in Seattle? That was fucked up.
Oh, I started watching that, but then gave it a pause.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's really interesting. Very intense about exploitative medical practices. I think the other thing that's worth mentioning is the Wild West and the Western as a cultural staple.
Yeah,
I don't actually know when the Western became as embedded in culture as it was, but it was 30s, 40s.
Yeah, it's definitely early cinema. A point where it's like they were making films about it from like the very, very earliest, because like one of the earliest things about animal cruelty in film was a horse that got thrown off a cliff or whatever, and that was in a Western. But I think that the sort of the reverent Western, because this is still in living memory just about in 1966, like it had happened 80 years before, so not necessarily people from Tombstone, but like people would have lived in the American West that were still alive. But just, you know, there was like, I think Clint Eastwood had started making films, like he's 100,000 years old. Yeah, the spaghetti westerns. There were spaghetti westerns going on in the 1960s. There were TV shows like Bonanza and Gunsmoke and The Fugitive, which I really want to watch the original show. There's Rawhide. There's all kinds of things just like just reveling in the aesthetics of this without really taking into account the fact that actually there was a lot
maybe
of...
maybe not a good time.
But also like the fact that it was quite a diverse... group
much
of people
more diverse
going
than
out
portrayed.
Into the, yeah, exactly. There's a great also, horrible. There's a great horrible histories thing, which is nice. About cowboys.
I think it, like the other thing is it romanticizes it into a way where it's actually hard to separate the image of the Western from the actual Wild West, and the storytelling elements of what makes a Western have overtaken what the West was like in popular culture.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I think definitely something I'd like to do more research about, and I could have done research Same. About in the month when we weren't recording this episode.
I mean, I have a solid reason why I didn't.
No, I know. I was just working.
You were working fucking hard. You were working really hard.
Anyway, do you want to do?
That's a very good reason.
Do you want to do the problems with the history in the serial?
Yeah. So the probable history, the storyline of the serial makes some departures from what we know. No, as fact. So Wyatt Earp was not ranking marshal of Tombstone, Virgil was, and he deputised Wyatt as an emergency less than an hour before the battle, similarly to how Wyatt deputises the Doctor. Kate Holliday probably spoke with a Hungarian accent rather than the exaggerated American accent in this show. Bat Masterson, Johnny Ringo, Warren Earp and Phineas Cantor were not present in Tombstone in October 1881.
Oh, whoops.
Consequently, neither Ringo nor Phineas participated in the gunfight at the OK Corral and were therefore not casualties as portrayed here. Warren Earp didn't die until July 1900, almost 19 years after the events of the story take place. Phineas's brother Ike Clanton survived the gunfight, where their father Pa Clanton had died in August 1881, about 10 weeks before the battle.
Oh my god.
So completely different cast, effectively. So no reference is made to four of the gunfight's actual participants. Morgan Earp, who is a brother of the other Earps, and the Clanton's brothers, fellow outlaw cowboys Billy Claiborne
what
and Thomas Frank McClory. Furthermore, Doc Holliday was only 30 years old in 1881, whereas the act playing him in this, Anthony Jacobs, was 48. Wyatt was the only member of the Earp combat team who was not wounded. Quite different.
Yeah, quite different. This is, you know, I think
it's Donald Cotton... It's a dramatisation rather than an actual historical...
Yeah. Donald Cotton had been, like...
It's hard to get references.
Contacting someone he knew in America who sort of knew about it to check, and then eventually he just gave up and based it on My Darling Clementine. Which is fair.
Which makes it a very pure historical.
I have seen, I would say, about 8 minutes of My Darling Clementine. Would you like to know how?
Yes.
It is featured in an episode of MASH called Movie Tonight, in which they all watch a movie, but there's so many problems with watching the movie. They have to entertain themselves while they fix the film reel.
I love
it's
your love
so
for MASH.
Cute.
It feels then... so inexplicable to me.
And then in the final scene, like the pre-credit scene, they're all in the operating room and they all start singing My Darling Clementine.
Aww.
So good.
The other little, very much not historical context, but fun. One of my comfort TV shows, which I watched 12 seasons of in surgery recovery, is Ghost Adventures. And they go to Tombstone twice. And wow. It's the first episode of the show where Zach Bagans openly wants to be fucked by a ghost. It's hilarious TV. It's obvious. Ghost Adventures is not a sensitive show. It is not thought out in the way it presents various historical topics. But if you want to see the actual locations of Tombstone and know a little bit more about its history as a town, it's a fun way to have a light touch history.
Is there a BuzzFeed Unsolved episode about Tombstone? I know there's a ghost town episode, but I don't know which town it was.
Oh, I can picture. It's definitely one that has been on Ghost Adventures. There is season 5, episode 5.
There you go.
Nice.
But yeah, I also have, as I mentioned, I bought a Doctor Who book, Running Through Corridors, Robin Toby's Marathon Watch of Doctor Who. And I've got their comments on the gunfighters. They're quite long, so I'm going to sort of excerpt it. Apparently, here we go. Fan reputation is a funny thing. You remember that convention panel we were on a couple of weeks ago in LA, Toby? The premise of this is that they're emailing each other every day. We were discussing the future of the series and what we might expect under the aegis of Stephen Moffat, and a woman in the audience piped up as if she were delivering holy writ that there were two monsters she didn't want to see make a return appearance in Doctor Who. The Zabi were one, and the gunfighters were the other. Leaving aside the rather odd idea that the BBC Wales might be planning Revenge of the Clantons or the Bat Masterson stratagem, it reinforced again that this peculiar idea of the gunfighters is the show's nadir. That was based on the fact that it had the lowest ratings ever, not even remotely true, looked cheap and nasty, nope, and had jokes in. Ah, guilty as charged there, Your Honour. Of course it has jokes in, it's a Donald Cotton script. You can tell that from the appalling pun in the title, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Yeah, basically they're just very positive about it, and it's nice.
Because it's a good story.
It's so fun. Rob Sherman claims that the first individual episode titles don't appear until Aliens of London World War III, because before that the stories are still given individual titles
rather than two parters.
Yeah,
that's a fair cop.
But yeah, it's a very good book. I would recommend it to people, and I might post like a transcript of a bit more of their thoughts on the gunfighters. It's just very good. It's in several volumes, so I only have the 60s volume, but I like it and I approve of it.
I am nodding because I do not know what else to say.
Yes. And I didn't know where else to mention this, but there is an actual person of colour in the cast for this serial, but they are in an unnamed, non-speaking role, and I didn't even spot them on my second watch. That's Doctor Who in the 60s, everybody.
That's British TV in the 60s.
Yeah. But, you know, at least they were there, I guess. I don't know what to say. Like, there were a lot of Chinese immigrants working. This was a Chinese actor or actress. There were a lot of Chinese people working on the railroads in America in the 1800s. Yeah. So maybe that's what they were going for. But
maybe.
Anyway, critique, really. The issue is that we loved it and don't have anything to complain about. We already discussed the serial pretty in depth.
I think it's also, like, it's fun, but it's not actually a massively deep serial. It doesn't raise any massively deep points or questions or issues.
And that's fine.
It's just a fun romp through the Wild West.
Yes.
And some days, that's all you want.
Let me get this straight. A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard, it can move anywhere in time and space?
Yes.
Quite so.
But that's ridiculous.
I'm going to leave the first bullet point for a bit because it might take a while, but the second bullet point is Stephen and Dodo, because we haven't had a Stephen and Dodo episode before. No. I was intrigued because they're actually not terribly well represented in the books, but Stephen has loads of audios because Peter Purvis is an icon and he keeps doing them and I love it. Stephen has been in 3 full Big Finish audios, 14 Companion Chronicles and 3 First 14. Doctor Adventures, as well as 10 early adventures, 6 short trips and 1 part of a First World War trilogy by Justin Richards, which was BBC audio. I didn't even know it existed, but now I must obtain it. Then we have...
You are, as ever, truly yourself.
Yes, exactly. And then we have... He was in 1 Virgin Missing Adventure, 2 Past Doctor Adventures, 1 Decalogue, and 6 short trips. So less popular in the wilderness years. I think it helps that they rediscovered some of his serials and are sort of re-releasing them and, you know, all that, that he's more popular these days. And also that Peter Purvis is still alive.
Yeah, it does help.
He is fairly popular, and he is wonderful, and I love him very much. He also... Peter Purvis now does William Hartnell's voice... Like, he plays one as well. It's usually he's Stephen and one. And then, like, for example, in the recent one, which is called The Secrets of Det San, I think, which is a Yeti one? ? He plays those two. And then they've recast Dodo as someone called Lauren Cornelius, who is now playing Dodo in the audios, so that we can have Dodo stories. Because Jackie Lane sadly passed away a few months ago. Which is really sad, because we hadn't made it to a dodo cereal yet. And apparently her family were like, yeah, apparently her family were really overwhelmed by all the positivity from all the fans who were like, oh, we're really sorry about Jackie passing away. She was really lovely. We all liked her.
Oh, that sounds like Doctor Who fans, in fairness.
Yeah. So then on to Dodo. I love Dodo. She had a very bad rap in the expanded universe. Like, there's this whole thing where maybe she died or like she was in and out of quotation mental institutions. One where she had like a baby out of wedlock. Like, there was a lot of grim stuff going on. Not that it's grim to have a baby out of wedlock, but like the way that they presented it was quite grim.
Out of curiosity, how did they present it?
I barely remember because I tried to avoid it, but basically it was just making her miserable and she was really unhappy. But yeah, so she's been in...
that's shitty on several levels.
Yeah, she's been in 6 Companion Chronicles and 1 Early Adventure. As I said, she was recently recast for audio. Novel and story-wise, she's been in 2 Virgin Missing Adventures, 2 Past Doctor Adventures, 2 Decalogues, and 4 Short Trips. One of the novels she was in is called Who Killed Kennedy? And that is where we get kind of the split timeline of Dodo Shapley, however you pronounce it. So accounts differed on Dodo's life after leaving the Doctor. Whilst one said that she spent her life in psychiatric hospitals before falling in love with James Stevens and being murdered, others agreed that she lived past the 1970s. What? Why does Doctor Who do this? And then,
can I opt out?
Maybe. In the 20th anniversary edition of Who Killed Kennedy, written by Bishop in 2016, after finishing the final entry of his book, it's epistolary, Stevens contacts the 12th Doctor and convinces him to alter the coordinates of the Master's time ring so that he can travel to 11th of August 1971. He prevents Francis Cleary from killing Dodo. Both he and Cleary die in the struggle, but it allows Stevens' younger self and Dodo to live on happily together. In the new timeline, it is no longer known who killed Kennedy, and Stevens and Dodo eventually write a series of children's stories about an old man who travels through time and space. An in-universe version of David Bishop reveals at the end that Stevens died shortly after December 2015 at the age of 70. So that's good. The thing in Who Killed Kennedy is that it turns out that the guy who's trying to investigate Who Killed Kennedy by going back in time finds out that a future version of himself kills Kennedy and he is destined to go back in time and kill Kennedy. It's weird.
No.
The Zapruder tape didn't tell me anything about this. Aim? Aim? Okay, I hear you again. Hello. Did you hear my whole diatribe about who killed Kennedy?
I got to just after they write
Basically, it turns out in the original version of the book, the guy goes backwards in time to try and find out who killed Kennedy and finds out that a future version of himself is destined to kill Kennedy. So he has to wait through his life and then go back in time and kill Kennedy so that the timeline is restored. Anyway, also that's Donald wild. Donald Cotton in the 80s wrote the novelization of this serial. I didn't read it. But it's narrated in the first person by Doc Holliday, and a framing scene introduces him on his deathbed and makes a major change in the character of Johnny Ringo by just depicting him as a student of the classics. Like, he's going to use the money that he gets from this gig to buy, like, the Oxford Encyclopedia of Classical Literature or something like that.
That's a light I didn't expect for Johnny Ringo.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then I'm going to do our short trip, and then I'm going to talk about the Donald Cotton Extended Universe.
Yes.
So the short trip of this episode is from More Short Trips, and it's called 64 Carlisle Street by Gary Russell. I do like Gary Russell's stories. He did a great novelization of the TV movie. We have to ring the epistolary bell. We have to sound the epistolary klaxon, because it is epistolary. It is presented as a series of police reports about an incident at 64 Carlisle Street. I love whenever Stephen is mentioned, they have to point out that he's tall, dark, and handsome. Stephen Taylor writes. It's very good.
That's actually the law.
Dodo is a very efficient under-parlour maid and hates it, which is an excellent character note. And one trails an intergalactic murderer all the way to Edwardian London. And I really love Doctor Who so much. Basically, this guy, he's a lord. His daughter is involved with this guy, Rotlov or Rotlux, who turns out to be an alien symbiote connected to it's kind of like the Trill, but if the Trill was in an empty body, like the body of Rotlock.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, okay. The body of Rotlock. I think I'm saying the name wrong, but the body is not actually a person, but is being controlled by the symbiont that then detaches itself and attaches to the daughter of the Lord, and then she has to like break free of its control. And that's sort of the main part of the story. Cool. And they're like trailing this person because they're a murderer and have escaped from a prison planet in an alternate dimension and therefore are sort of destroying the fabric of time by being here. I would recommend reading it. It's very cool. It's just a lot of fun. All of the different police reports have a slightly different voice that's being narrated in. Obviously, there's like the people upstairs and downstairs, so to speak. There's people who are very shocked by Dodo's impropriety because she keeps just talking to people when she's supposed to be being a maid.
Of course she does.
She's perfect.
That's my girl.
Everyone's, she tells the Lord of the Manor that her name is Dorothea and he goes, oh, I'll call you Dottie. And she goes, no, actually my friends call me Dodo, thank you.
Nice.
I love her. Stephen is... his role is as one's chauffeur, Taylor. And he's very offended when he's told to go through...
A chauffeur Taylor?
No, his name is... he's a chauffeur and his last name is Taylor. So everyone calls him Taylor. And he's very offended when he's told he has to go through the servant's entrance because he's like, why is there a separate entrance? Because he's from the future where there's no class system, probably. Then we have a quote that's just describing Taylor, where it goes, he was very handsome, a tall, broad man looking a treat in that green uniform. He had a lovely smile, and when he took his cap off, he had short hair all smoothed back.
A treat.
And then later it says, I expect he said it better than that, because he was quite cultured, he was. Didn't seem the service type, really. Did I say he had lovely eyes? Really brown and smiley they was. Stan Emily the maid, I love her very much. But yeah, it's a great short trip. It's quite short, which is always nice. And it's just lovely to have kind of the intrepid, like, crime-fighting doctor, which is very fun.
Especially when it's one.
Yes. And then we move on to the very limited Donald Cotton Expanded Universe.
Please tell me more.
So Donald
You mentioned
Cotton...
this before we recorded, and it sounds... fucking wild.
So Donald Cotton didn't do a lot in television. He was an actor, and then he went on to work in stage after he got out of television. So he basically did Doctor Who, and a second show I'm going to talk about in a minute. And then before that, he did a bunch of things for BBC's third programme, which were like comic Greek myths, which I guess is how he got the gig to write The Mythmakers.
That'd do it.
So he wrote The Mythmakers and The Gunfighters, and then he had a pitch for a third one that didn't get picked up. It was called like The Fighters of Aquarius or something like that. And then he created the show Adam Adamant Lives, which I watched the first episode of today, which is an episode that he wrote. Oh my god. So
please tell me everything.
Adam Adamant is an Edwardian spy from 1902 who has this arch nemesis called The Face, which is already incredible. And he's like doing sword fights and, you know, there's various enemies that he has to fight. It's very James Bondy, and everyone's talking
it
about how cool he
like...
is.
A holodeck program that Julian Bashir would adore.
It does. And then it turns out that his beloved girlfriend is actually a henchwoman for The Face, and she betrays him and injects him with this mysterious medicine. And then in the next scene, it's the 1960s, and some people are doing demolition work at the house that he was in, and they find him frozen in a massive block of ice underneath the building.
What?
And they thaw him out, and he's convinced that this is all some kind of terrible trick being played on him, so he escapes. And he's so confused by everything that's going on. He falls over trying to go up and down escalator. He thinks everyone is a spy. He has a sword cane, which is of course incredible. He ends up getting followed by this girl called Georgina, and she like goes up and she's like, I know who you are, you're Adam Adamant. I'm such a big fan. My granddad used to tell me stories about you. And he goes, God. Oh, who's your granddad? And she goes, you probably won't remember him. You only met him once. And then she says, he goes, oh, yeah, of course I remember him. Bit young to be a grandfather. And she's like, it's 1966, Adam. Get with the program. And then he has
this
to rescue her from
incredible.
Some... Then she has to, he has to rescue her from some racketeers. And it's honestly so good. I was having
it
such a good time.
Buck wild.
It's kind of, and like half of it is just him making incisive and witty commentary about the 1960s. Also, at one point, the phone rings and he doesn't know what it is, so he picks up the phone receiver with his sword.
Yes!
And then he tries to put it to his face, but he puts the wrong bit to his mouth at first. It's so funny. It's very Ichabod Crane in Sleepy Hollow. I think Ichabod does it a bit better in Sleepy Hollow, and I love him more. But also, Adam Adamant doesn't have the problem where they kill off the very cool main female character after three seasons, because Adam Adamant only got two seasons, and only the first season survives in the majority.
What a loss for culture.
Truly. The second, there's all but one episode of the first season survives, but then only two episodes of season two survive, and I don't think they have audio for most of it. Tragic loss for culture. Also, Ridley Scott directed a bunch of episodes of it.
Ridley Scott keeps popping up.
Yeah, and it was produced by Verity Lambert, and it just, there's a lot going on with it, and it's perfect, and I love it. So, very pro Adam Adamant Lives on this podcast. We support Adam Adamant Lives. It's also at one point, there's a bit, it's clearly going for Bond, right? But there's a bit where he bursts into this woman's hospital room because he was in the hospital being examined. Everyone's like, why is this crazy man claiming to be Adam Adamant, a man who died 64 years ago? And in some very unsubtle exposition, Mullen goes, well, his body was never found, was it? He merely disappeared in mysterious circumstances.
Wow.
But he bursts into this
sort of exposition.
He bursts into this woman's hospital room and she's reading a magazine with James Bond in it. But the thing is that she's not reading the magazine. She's turned the magazine over back on itself. So you can see the front and back covers, and the front cover says James Bond in really big letters.
Wow.
It's perfect. It's perfect television.
This sounds hilarious.
It's really good. The first episode is on YouTube. I don't know about the rest of it, but okay. I want it on BritBox. BritBox, please. BritBox, please.
Once you sponsored us, BritBox, this is our next demand.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, that's the expanded universe for this episode.
Thank you. That was fun.
Yeah. God, I want to watch more Adam Adamant now.
What's stopping you?
Nothing. Right. Rankings.
Rankings. Right. What segments do we do in this?
What's your X of the week?
My X of the week is probably gonna be... Oh boy, they're just floating through my head. Murderer of the week is gonna be Johnny Ringo, just because I enjoyed him.
He is great.
He's awful. I enjoyed him.
Mine is, of course, Musical Triumph of the Week for the Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon, the best song ever put to piano. It's great. And no Musical Triumph will beat it, although I do really like The Rings of Akatet in the new series. I think that's a really nice song. I
cannot recall it. Can you tell I'm flagging?
Rest now, my warrior. Etc. It's very pretty.
Sounds pretty.
We have a 1 degree of Blake Seven because Richard Beale, who played Bat Masterson, played Saemon in the Blake Seven episode The Web. Very dramatic. Annabelle Kane's probably hiding somewhere in the corner. So the costumes of Gila and Navara are both made from white overalls covered in thin sheets of metallic plastic. Unfortunately, the plastic was not very strong or versatile, and throughout the episode it can be seen to be in various states of disintegration, dependent on the order of the filmed scenes.
So this is now becoming a full-on podcast within a podcast, isn't it?
Well, I just looked up some trivia, because when it's a 1 degree, it's really quick to do, and it feels like a waste of a segment. And then according to Gareth Thomas, who played Blake, it took 9 takes to film Deep Roy's death scene because his eyes kept crossing.
That's fucking hilarious.
And Avon states that one day Blake will not be making the decisions aboard the Liberator, a prediction that comes true in Blake 7 power play, because Blake vanishes and then Avon has to take over, and then he immediately is just looking for Blake the whole time. It's like, did you really want Blake to leave, Avon? Are you sure? Are you sure?
It does sound like they're in love from everything I've heard.
I don't think they are, but they're very much in hate. They're in loathe.
Well, that's a feeling, all right.
Yeah. Out of 5.
Out of 5. I'd give a solid 4.
Absolutely, yeah.
Not a perfect episode, but I had a good time.
4 repetitions of The Last Chance Saloon out of 5.
Oh my god, we do that, don't we? Oh my god, I'm really out of the podcast saddle.
Oh, babe.
Holy shit, I apologise.
No, it's fine.
Tired.
I went first because I saw an opportunity.
Thank you. I'm gonna say 4 Spurs on the cowboy boots.
Yes. And then we have to put it in the overall ranking.
Rankings.
Oh god, we've got quite a lot of good things up at the top here now.
And it's not, I don't think it's top 10.
No, I think it might be top 11 though. Is it better than the Pirate Planet? It might be.
I'd probably put it below Pirate Planet.
Okay, but then I would put it below Curse of Peladon because it doesn't have Ice Warriors.
That's fine with me.
Okay, so it's going between Curse of Peladon and the Stones of Blood.
That's fine with me.
Number
13. I'd probably put it on par.
Yeah, and then I'm going to look up the Gallifrey thing, but I'm fairly certain it's at like 98, 198. So let's find out. Where do you think it's going to be? On the Gallifrey 200 ranking.
Right at the bottom.
Yeah, let's...
It's out of 200, right? 191.
Yeah. Let's look. It is 175.
Okay.
More respectable than I thought. It is 2 above Arc of Infinity and below 4 to Doomsday and Galaxy 4. Of course it is 8 above The Mutants, the best serial in Doctor Who
history. The best story of all time.
It's not even number 1 on our ranking anymore, but it's the best story of all time.
It's number 5.
It's number 5 out of 36. We definitely recorded Ghostlight before this.
That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's our episode. It is your turn to do the outro.
My turn to do the outro. Thank you so much for joining us on this little gallop round the world west. Do join us next time when we'll be discussing The Time Warrior.
Woo!
in the meantime, do drop us a message on Twitter at PolarityPod, or on Tumblr at polaritypod.tumblr.com. You can follow us on Twitter as individuals. I am at AYM Tell Stories, that's AYM Tell Stories, and Rosie is over at Dot Sayers. In the meantime, don't get involved in a shootout at the OK Corral. Oh god, don't do that.
Definitely.
There'll
not.
Be blood on the sawdust.
There'll be blood upon the sawdust at the Last Chance Saloon. Do do do.